And you are listening to the Punk News Podcast for the week of May 7, 2014. Welcome back to the Punk News Podcast, the hardest, the fastest, the toughest, the smartest podcast on the internet, 100% independent. We're stranger, faster, and wiser than your average cat. We do not slow down. We do not stop. We do not sleep. PunkNews.org, carrying on the grand tradition of Joe Strummer, of Penny Rimbaud, of Jello Biafra, of Ari Up, of Tumata Duplenty, carrying on the grand tradition of Darby Crash, of Black Randy, of Polystyrene, of Nick Blingo, carrying on the grand tradition of Ian McKay, Keith Morse, Penelope Houston, and John Lydon. And if you don't know those names, you need to fire up the Google machine, because this is PunkNews.org. Banned from the Roxy? We don't care. Banned from DC? We don't care. Crucified by the FCC? Oh, wait, that's how it started. We don't need a book of rules. We don't want a list of boundaries. We are about Kens. We are not about cannots. We are about thinking for yourself. We are about skeptical thinking. We are about questioning authority. This is not what is and what is not punkrock.org. This is think for yourself. .org. This isn't do exactly what some zine tells you to do. .org. This is critical thinking. .org. This is punk news.org, and that means something. And that's why we love all you listeners and readers, because you are with us, because you are smart enough to make your own decisions. You are punknews.org leaders, readers, and listeners. And I know you're with us. Hesitation Station, I Have No Friends, Black Shirt Music, Extra Cheese Pizza, Luca Brasi, I know you're with us. Misinterpreter, Lush J, I've Made a Huge Mistake, Hashish, USB Daddy, Barley Pat, and Torgo, I know you're with us. Anonymous, USC, Preteen Ags, J. Winston, The Incline, SS McMullen, and Preston, I know you're with us. Moist Philly, Illazilla, Zobels, Ned Sammy, Jonathan 1069, Sam B, Sam S, Mark L, Barry C. I know you're with us. Jerry C, Lewis N, Chris G, Paul W, Jason R, Dan S, Dave S, John D, Derek B, Natalie T, Patrick R. I know you're with us. The other Patrick R, Guy R, Tony, Duncan, Rob, Charles, Matt, Sean, Joe, John, Kerry, Lauren, Hank, Chris. I know you're with us. Lopa, Jack, Sam, Tony, Sam, Fernando, Michelle, Steve, Hans, Chuck, Bob, Steve, I know you're with us, Matt and Anna, and all of you that don't like everything that we post, but remain critical, that remain thinking for yourself, that understand that you won't like everything, but as long as you approach everything with a critical and thoughtful standpoint, that's okay. I know you're with us, and that's why we love you, Punk News readers and listeners. I love each and every one of you. You are all Punk News, and with me is the man that remains cool under pressure, cool as a cucumber, cool as a block of ice. You know him because he goes over nearly every single letter that gets posted to punknews.org. We are here for the first time ever with copy editor Adam Eisenberg. Adam, how are you doing? Adam E. on the Punk News Podcast.
I'm a little exhausted, actually. But other than that, ready to roll.
And also with us is a man so heavyweight that he does not move, the world moves around him. He's timeless. He's unflappable, undappable, and unattackable. Here we are with managing editor Adam White. Adam White, back again. So happy to have you here again.
Did you say John Kerry in that thing?
Like, I said John N. Kerry. I got a bunch of emails from people, and I didn't want to give their whole name, so I just did their first names.
Because that would have been interesting.
John Kerry is with us at punknews.org. John Kerry is down. I believe I also got one for Newt Gingrich.
You could have made this whole like thing about like Steamboat and the Punk News Podcast. Hi. Yeah, I've been off for the past couple weeks doing, I don't know, life stuff or whatever it is that you do when you're not on the podcast. So, yeah. How's everything going?
It's gone good. It actually has gone real good. We've made it through the fire, and this is John G, Features Editor. And I just grabbed the bull by the horn. We've gotten literally hundreds of emails. I'm not even kidding. Hundreds of emails or messages about this. And I don't know, Adam W., do you want to kick us off, or do you want me to fire this baby on up? We got to address it. I mean, honestly, I wasn't even sure we should address it, because in the world of the internet, things move so quickly that it's 1 week later, people have already forgotten about it. But on the other hand, we do sort of have to address it because it was a big deal at the org. Adam, why don't you take us off, Adam?
Sure. Okay. Yeah. So, John, what the hell?
Oh, you want me to respond? I'll tell you what the hell. I'll tell you what the hell.
I wanted to do that. John. This...
People can't be scared to live, Adam. People can't be scared of life.
So, all right. So, if you don't, if all of you are completely lost about what has precipitated John's completely exhausting intro to this show tonight, and I assume what we're talking about right now.
I appreciate the love of the readers. I appreciate the love.
Yeah. So, what caused all this love and other stuff that happened was John a few months ago emailed me and he said, "Hey, I got a crazy idea. As you know, Fred Phelps, like notorious super bigot who runs the Westboro Baptist Church, which is kind of like the Justice League of notorious super bigots, has died. And for whatever reason, these guys are open to doing interviews." And John was like, "I'm going to try to interview one of them. Is that cool?" And like, I read the email and I was like, no, this sounds like it's going to take a lot more work than me saying, you know, "Can I interview Masked Intruder?" But I was like, well, if you don't, like, I don't know, give him a weird soapbox or glorify them or anything like that, then yeah, all right, sure. Which is honestly that email, I think, was the total amount of planning that went into this whole fiasco. And I guess, like, to our faults, that maybe we should have, had a little bit more in-depth discussion over whether talking to one of these people was really that great an idea. But hey, Punk News is kind of a duocracy, right? So it's a completely volunteer-driven thing. So if someone shows up and they're like, "Hey, I'm going to do some work and write content for the site," you know, we're probably going to go with it if there's someone that has some credibility with us, which, John, you know, you write all sorts of shit, so you definitely do. So, yeah, the article went up, again, without us, you know, planning too much, because, you know, we don't actually do anything, despite the fact that we have job titles. And, it caused a thing. And people were mad. And some people weren't mad, but the people that were mad, John. They were mad.
See, but that's why this article needs to exist. And Adam, in some ways, I feel you're selling me out, Adam.
No.
You said it was a fiasco in the respect that I didn't expect that many people to have. I knew some people would have a negative reaction, but people have a negative reaction if I interview Dwed Hellion or if I interview Masked Intruder. You know,
it was a fiasco in that it was like, oh God, I have to deal with this now, kind of fiasco. Not in like that. In posting it, we necessarily crossed the line. It was more that, like, all this requires a response from us, so we actually have to work a little bit. That's kind of fiasco.
My standpoint, and I'll just briefly reiterate, has always been the same. And I'll note that we actually had an internal discussion whether or not we should post a response as to why we posted this article, and we did. And that's when people that supported the article really came out of the woodwork. So the original post had some positivity, a lot of negativity, but the response saying why we posted it got a lot of positivity. So I think the negativity is actually overstated. But my stance has been the same and has not changed. And I've, as I've iterated on the Punk News podcast many, many times, I feel as though punk rock has its blinders on. I feel as though punk rock has become a place where if you subscribe to rule A, rule B, rule C, and rule D, you are punk rock. If you don't subscribe to that, then you're not punk rock. And not only that, we don't want to speak to anybody, whether we agree with them or if we disagree with them. We only want to stay in our little womb of safetiness where everyone feels comfortable. But that's not what punk rock is to me. What punk rock is to me is thinking for yourself and doing daring things. And the point of this article was twofold. Really, the funny part is what I thought was the most interesting part of the article got way overshadowed by the other part. The point is let's just – we got to say it. Steve Drain, Westboro Baptist Church are evil. And I don't even mean they're misguided. I mean they're evil. They're evil, evil, evil people. Anybody that goes with to any funeral ever and makes a scene is evil. Well, I don't. If you go to let me put it this way: if you go to a funeral and protest a dead soldier or a kid that died of AIDS or just a kid that died, you are evil. So the point is there are bad people out there. A lot of punk people think there aren't bad people out there, but there are bad people out there, and you have to confront the badness out there. Because as Jello Biafra states, if you push it underground, it just proliferates and spreads underground. So we have to confront guys like Steve Drain and people like him, and there are a lot of people like him, to understand what makes them what they are, what do they believe, so we can prevent that in the future. And I think that's one of the most noblest purposes of journalism, and that's why I think this article is one of the greatest and most important articles Punk News has ever posted. The second reason why I did the article, and really, which is what I found most interesting, is there's this bizarre area where punk rock and the Westboro Baptist Church's belief intersect. That is, both often say the end of the world is coming. Both are often against international foreign conflict. I can't even remember off the top of my head now. There's a couple other areas where it intersects, but those are the two biggies. And so, if our values intersect the Westboro Baptist Church, it definitely should be a time for us to reflect on why we believe what we believe. Not that we should change what we believe, but it's at all times it's important to say, why do we believe what we believe, just to make sure that we're on solid ground. So if anything, we learn more about the opposition and also have a chance to reflect on what we believe to make sure that we are right in what we believe. And I guess what last comment about, actually, I got two last things to say about this. Second to last thing is what really kind of bummed me out is no one caught my ironic last line. Steve Drain said, the leader of Westboro Baptist Church, "I'm really glad that your parents and my parents didn't decide to abort because we wouldn't even be having this conversation." With me closing out that line implying, maybe I'm not glad that his parents didn't have an abortion, but nobody caught that, you know, which really bummed me out. Last thing people said, well, actually, and I want to think, we got some hate, and I got some hate personally. I got some threats. I got some death threats. Do you believe I got death threats?
What? Really?
Yeah, I did.
Holy shit.
I got some love too. And I read out a lot of people that gave us love, and I really appreciate all the people that supported Punk News and all the people that supported me. And also I appreciate and I accept and I agree with people that think we shouldn't have posted the article, but thought about it critically and didn't say, you know, we're assholes or idiots for posting if they just disagreed. Do you see what I'm saying? So if you have an independent critical position on it, I'm all for you and I respect that. The only thing I don't respect is people that just go for the knee-jerk reaction that say, this is stupid, you're evil, you shouldn't interview this guy, which I disagree with. And I should point out that I think Punk News is the most safest of all places to interview this guy because he's not going to change anyone's opinion. In Time, in Newsweek, maybe he would. In Punk News, we're all smart enough to realize what this guy's saying is bullshit. Last thing, and then I'll shut up about this, because it was a challenging week. I got tons and tons of hate mail, and I got lots of love mail, too, or support letters of support, which I appreciated. But I thought to myself, am I glad or sorry that I did this article? I'm glad that I stand behind the article 100%, but I wonder, basically the article costed me 3 friendships. And so 2 friendships I'm actually not bummed about losing because, I haven't been friends with those people for a while. And so actually cutting off the friendship is good because I guess in some respects we're almost like anti-friends because I got people backbiting me. So I'm glad to cut those ties off. 3rd friendship I lost really did kind of bum me out. I didn't expect to lose that friend. So was posting this article, which I feel is valid, worth losing that friendship? Probably not. We'll see if it can be mended in the future. But I did not expect people to have this. Well, I hate to use the word visceral because it's a cheesy word, but I did not expect people to have such a potent reaction to this article. So.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that surprised me was not necessarily that there was a reaction. I think that was to be expected, but the volume of the reaction and the nature of some of the reaction. I mean, people who disagree with the article and have a reasoned, reason why that's you know, based on some sort of critical thought, cool, fine. I encourage that. But I think some of the attitude was, you know, these guys do, you know, the Venn diagram where there is some crossover. I think that made people uncomfortable. And I think, you know, people would rather not think about that. You know, it's uncomfortable to think that these people who you look at and say they're evil, you know, they're terrible people, but we actually do agree on some things. And I think that is something to think about, not ignore, but I think some people would rather ignore it.
I'd be a big part of this too comes out of the fact that, and a lot of people have a hard time with this one because it's, you know, to their credit, it's not an obvious thing, is that Punk News really isn't like a business. It's not an organization that has a, you know, that has like a top-down hierarchy of what's happening a lot of the time, we're, you know, like my title is like the biggest joke on really the whole site. Like, we don't really manage a whole lot. It's kind of like we have a handful of people that we trust to post stuff, and we give them the keys, and hopefully they post stuff. And when they don't post stuff, then we kind of get sucky because we're not being updated. And when they do, then, you know, Punk News gets good again. And it's, you know, it's one of those things where, like, there is not, before something like this happens, necessarily an enormous debate about it. Now, again, that's probably our fault. We probably should have, but that doesn't mean we wouldn't have posted it either. It may, I mean, we totally would have decided to post it. The other thing, though, is that there's, I saw a few arguments from people where they're saying, like, of all the bands in the world that you could be interviewing, you did this, which again ascribes way too much, I think, like, top-down planning to what happens on Punk News. Like, it does not work that way at all. Like, if we interview a band, it's because the person that's like suffering to do the interview has decided they want to interview that band. There's no one that's, you know, sitting on the back end with like a whiteboard and a list of all the upcoming releases to try to make sure that we like hit the right quota of all the big releases that are coming out this year or something like that. So it's not like we're doing something like this at the expense of talking about some deserving band. Like, these interviews, any of the content that we put together, just sort of bubbles up from the people that are contributing. So it's not, you know, I don't want people to assume that, you know, because we did this, it's resources that were devoted from us talking about, you know, some other thing. It was, you know, like anything on the site, it's something that got written and posted because someone felt passionate about writing it and posting it. And that's kind of the way this place works. And I think maybe because of Punk News's age and because we've been around for a long time and somehow haven't, I guess, pissed off that many people over the years, that they assume that we're like a bigger thing than we are. But, you know, we're not Rolling Stone. We're not, you know, we're not Vice. We're not, you know, Noisy or whatever Vice's thing is there. Like, we're not an organization which has like revenue or an organization or anything like that. So yeah, it's just, you know, punk news is like two steps away from anarchy on the back end most of the time. And I guess that's not always evident, I think, from the front end. There's way too
rock.
I like to think so, but that's what I'd think. But hey, so I can get that why, you know, so sometimes people look and they're like, you know, why is Punk News doing, you know, XYZ? And it's like, well, Punk News, you know, like the big hive mind, probably hasn't thought too much about it one way or another. So, you know, this is what, you know, we're a little bit like the Wild West still, and I'm okay with that.
Well, don't worry, kids, by the time you hear this, we'll have a Andrew Jackson Jihad interview posted and we can all be happy again. So to wrap this up, I got a creepy email from the Westboro Baptist Church after this article ran. Should we read it?
No, don't give them the thing, but tell us about it.
it basically reiterates my argument that it's Steve Drain, and he's basically being very nice to me and sympathizing with the hate that Punk News received, which is shows how skillful of an actor he is with regards to trying to get people to believe what he's saying.
Oh, you think they're going to, like, send you a fruit basket or something?
He essentially did.
Oh.
You know, so that was kind of, I didn't reply to it, because I don't want to get involved with these people, you know what I mean? But
you're going to come home one day and he's going to be sleeping on your couch?
I would run out and call the cops, man, I'll tell you. Or I might even do something worse in that guy's case. But, Adam, you got a song for us?
Yeah, all right. So, we're going to, I feel like I totally don't play enough music on this thing, and I'm really going to try to get better on that. So this is the first song off of the new record by a band out of Toronto that is a duo now, but I've always sort of known them as a trio, called the Sun Parlor Players. The band right now is just two guys. It's Andrew Penner and Michael Rosenthal, and they're a very Ontario band a lot of the times to me. They've kind of got this post Neil Young and Crazy Horse, post Weakerthans, you know, post Deadly Snakes, post Constantines, you know, kind of mix of alt country with some garage rock, and I don't even know what else you want to put in there. But now they're a band that has some really rural roots, and their first few records are actually a lot more country you know, if you want to go, although we're really on the alt side of country here, but like we're a lot more rustic, let's say, than the new one that came out. And the new one's a little bit of a shock for that reason. This new one's got a lot of kind of like garagey cool stuff on it. So this song is called Soapbox. And it is the first song off of The Living Proof, which is the new record by Sun Parlor Players. And they are now touring all over over Canada supporting this sucker. So here you go. This is Soapbox.
Moving on with the podcast, Effed Up have just released a new single featuring Jay Mazix. Jay Maskus is how you say it, right? Of yeah. Dinosaur Jr. It's off their upcoming album called Glass Boys. They actually released two versions. The track is called Led by Hand, and I dug it, man. And it's exactly what I expected it to be. Kind of halfway between old school Effed Up and new school Effed Up. I dug it.
Yeah, you know what? This song seemed like, when the vocals came in, like, it was a way more brisk song than I was expecting for some reason. I may have been just, like, hanging the Dinosaur Jr. thing above them, where I was thinking that, like, you know, this is going to have, like, 14 minutes of guitar noodling in it. But, no, it doesn't. It's cool. It's good. And yeah, Maskus sounds good.
Yeah, I liked it, too. I mean, I tend to like pretty much everything this band does. But I think, like John said, it is kind of a happy medium between the earlier stuff and the later stuff. I mean, I think with this record, a lot of people are expecting something that's a little more compact than the previous couple releases. You know, I think it's 10 tracks as opposed to the, you know, the epic that the previous one was, and it sounded a little more focused.
Did you guys read that article that they posted on their blog, the How to Interview Fucked Up?
Indeed.
Yeah.
That is completely great and
so accurate too.
Yeah, you hear this from bands all the time, is that, like, you know, just notoriously tedious questions, you know, especially when they're trying to, like, support a record or something like this, and they know that everyone's just going to ask them the exact same shit over and over again. And I don't know, interviewing is tough. It's hard. It's hard for me. And I feel like, you know, I mean, like I don't get death threats or anything, but I just find it difficult. But yeah, so it's funny. It's go read that. It's good. John, you interview a lot of bands.
I do.
Find it difficult?
It depends on the band, actually. Actually, you guys want me to tell a funny story real quickly? I've interviewed Effed Up twice. I've interviewed Damien once and Mike once. Damien's a great interview. Mike's a good interview, although he's a little distanced, and I think that's on purpose. I've interviewed him twice. I was thinking, what if you interviewed Effed Up and asked them all the questions? They say, don't ask us. I mean, would they think that was hilarious, or would they hate you? Interviewing a band is easier the more you interview them. Like, I've interviewed World Inferno 5 or 6 times, Melvin's 5 or 6 times, Keith Moore's 5 or 6 times, Black Daddy 5 or 6 times. So when I call them up, it's like you're throwing down with a pal, and also you can get more meaty questions. Like, you know, there's always the question, you know, like, you know, how'd you sign to this label? What's it like using this guy as a producer? Whereas when you interviewed a whole bunch of guys, you can be like, yeah, man, so I saw you got a divorce. What's that like? Or something like that, you know?
Yeah, I think from, you know, because I do it a lot myself, I think, yeah, the more you interview people, the better it gets, because it becomes more of a conversation. Right now, I've been interviewing lately a lot of label people, and I'm finding those are going well, because those aren't people who get interviewed a lot. They're not sick and tired of the same old questions, so they're happy to talk about pretty much anything, even if it is kind of more run-of-the-mill stuff. Why'd you start a label? How'd you start a label? You know, they don't talk about it all the time, but... Yeah, I mean, the thing with bands that people have to consider is, you know, a band that's doing a lot of interviews, you know, supporting a record, they get asked the same questions, you know, a couple times a day, and it's got to get tedious after a while.
Yeah, and I think that, like, I feel like I'm almost paralyzed from not having done them in a while. Like, actually, that band that we just played, Some Parlor Players, their PR person got in touch with me. And they're like, hey, do you want to interview this band? And I'm like, I absolutely do. I love this band. Like, they're a great live act. I have all their records. Sure. But I haven't yet, because I'm pretty sure I'm going to be like, so you got a new record coming out. How's that? Oh, I'm not good at any of this. So yeah, new Fucked Up song. That's pretty good. Let's jump to a next story here. So Laura Jane Grace has announced that she's going to take part in the So Much More series. So the front woman of Against Me is going to be the center of a new web series called So Much More, which is being produced by AOL, who is trying to get into the original web video content business a little bit more. So this is among 16 new and original series that the company has announced that they're doing. So this particular series is described thusly. It says, the docuseries is about punk rock singer Tom Gabel, who came out in 2012 as a transgender woman, and her transformation into Laura Jane Grace, as well as the lives of the other members of the transgender community. So there you go. That's pretty obvious, I guess. Anyways, Laura Jane shared her enthusiasm on Twitter with a tweet that, I don't know, we posted. There's a hashtag in it. So anyways, you can find a trailer for the thing by visiting Punk News and clicking on the link in the article. So yeah, this is coming out. Did any of you guys see the trailer? We didn't really obviously link it, so you may not even stumbled upon it, but...
Yeah, I saw it. It looks pretty cool. I mean, I like the idea. I mean, AOL is clearly, I think this was one of 16 shows that they're working on, which was interesting. But I mean, the fact that someone like AOL, who, you know, is a pretty mainstream name, is shining a light on the transgender community, I think is pretty cool. And I think they found certainly the right person to, you know, kind of make that connection with people. I mean, in terms of transgender people that anyone who would be interested in learning more about that community are familiar with, I think Laura is probably the one.
Yeah, you know, I'll play devil's advocate here. I don't agree with it, but a lot of people will be saying, enough with you against me, enough with you against me. They're saying, you know, they're arguing that Laura Jane Grace is just being reduced to a transgender person, when there's really more to that and Against Me's music than just that. Do you guys feel as though they're focusing on it too much? I mean, like, by contrast, like, let's look at Tegan and Sarah. They're both lesbians, but, like, not every song is about being a lesbian. You know what I mean? So is Large and Grace focusing on it too much?
I think you know, one thing we have to consider is that Laura came out recently and she's documented a lot the fact that she's, you know, this was a struggle to get to this decision, and I guess the way I look at it is it's probably you know, right now in her life, this is almost, it seems like everything. And maybe that's because that's how it's being presented. But I think, you know, eventually over time, it may kind of fade into the background and it's like, oh yeah, we've heard this story and now we can kind of move on. But I think it's just that at the moment, you know, this point in time, it's more to the forefront than maybe it always will be.
Yeah. I mean, this is still, as you know, as far as life developments go, got to be a relatively recent one, you know, for her to be dealing with. So I don't at all begrudge her talking about it. You know, yeah, I guess I suppose it could get tiring if there's like, you know, 45 albums about this or something like that. But, you know, that's you write your most passionate stuff about what's actually happening to you. So this is what's actually happening to her. So that's cool. I'm cool with that. It hasn't once struck me as being excessive or too much or anything like that. I mean, like, what else would you write about than the things that are like actually passionately impacting your life? Like, I don't want,
man, the government.
Yeah. Like, I don't want Against Me to go write, like, you know, Baby, I'm an Anarchist again. Like, who cares? That's way less important given what she's going through.
Well, well said, Adam. I think that's an eloquent way to cap that off, and we'll move along. And this is a sad story. Is at a Miss May I show, I guess it was about Saturday, May 3rd, at a Miss May I show, a 21-year-old concert goer named Alberto Scott did a stage dive. He was not caught and hit the floor, and we're not sure how he died. He left the venue, I guess, on his own power, but he collapsed while exiting the video sometime after the stage dive was missed. Miss May I released a statement with regards to that. They said, as many of you heard, Alberto Scott, a Miss May I fan in attendance at our Webster Hall show on Saturday night, tragically died. We were deeply shocked and saddened to hear this news. We are awaiting a full report from the New York Police Department. In the meantime, we ask that all your thoughts and prayers be with his family. We have been made aware of a webpage that is raising funds to help pay for his funeral costs. We will be making a contribution and we strongly urge others to do so. One of the main reactions from this is that, well, I mean, it's sad no matter how you look at it. Of course, it's sad. But another question is, people have been saying, stage diving is a bad idea. You shouldn't stage dive. This is what happens when you let people stage dive. I've got a definite opinion on this, and I wonder if you guys want to state your opinion first on the concept of stage diving. And also, did the band handle this delicately? I think they did, but I mean, some people say they didn't.
Well, I mean, in terms of stage diving, it's tough because obviously you want to give people the freedom and the latitude at a punk show to have fun. At the same time, you're not going to see me throwing myself off the stage. I'm usually the guy in front who's trying to protect his head as people are landing on it. You know, and in that sense, you know, it does stage diving impose on other people who are trying to enjoy the show? Yes. And in that sense, you know, I can't say I'm for it, but, you know, if somebody wants to go leap off the stage and they want to take that risk and put others at risk, I don't see at this point in time how you stop them from doing that.
I'm not sure what I think about this. I mean, like, I assume that I'm like most people and that I don't really like getting kicked in the face. From that perspective, I'm probably not super cool with these. I feel like I haven't been to a lot of shows lately where they're happening, but I think that's probably because I'm seeing more shows in bars than I am in, you know, medium-sized venues where you have kind of that much of a ledge where like a stage dive makes a lot of sense. So it's not something that I seem to encounter all that much anymore. I assume that I would have a lot less patience for it now than maybe I did when I was 16. If I think back to when I was 16, though, it was just, you know, that was something people did. And I get, you know, I suppose it's dangerous. Like, you know, a lot of things are dangerous, but you know, riding a bike can be dangerous. So I guess it's sort of, I guess, the risk you take by getting up on a ledge and leaping into a crowd of people. In most cases, it's probably comes out okay for you. I don't know. John, you have an opinion here.
I do have an opinion here. My opinion is this, is that, first of all, this is very sad. It's sad any time anybody dies of an accident like this was. That being said, people have been saying we should ban stage diving or stop stage diving, and that I think that's quite an overreaction. The fact is, well, I looked this up. I don't know why. The deadliest animal in the world is the mosquito. Second deadliest animal in the world is humans, which, you know, that's not an animal. You know what the third deadliest animal in the world is, according to some website that I looked at?
What?
Dogs. Dogs. Dogs kill 40,000 people a year, right? So should we ban all dogs from homes? No. You know, I mean, it's sad, but the risk, I guess, of getting mauled by a dog when compared to the chance that it's actually going to happen and the severity that's going to happen and the joy you get out of owning a dog means, as a society, we're willing to accept the risk of dogs. I mean, how often does somebody die from stage diving in the U.S.? Once a year, maybe less, you know? So it's sad somebody died from stage diving, but how many hundreds of thousands or maybe tens of thousands stage dives happen per year in the United States? A lot. Statistically speaking, it's far more dangerous to get in your car than it is to stage dive. So we can't go banning something just because something bad happens to one person once or someone very infrequently. I don't stage dive because I don't want to. And also, I mean, I'm a bigger guy and it'd be rude. And I don't like getting kicked in the head. But the fact is, I'm perfectly happy with the rule that at a show, if you stand in the back or sort of in the back, you don't get hassled by the mosh pit and you don't get stage dove on. And if you want to mosh, you can mosh in the middle. Or if you want to stage dive, you can stage dive in the front. I think that's a fair rule so everyone can get some sort of enjoyment out of a show. So it's sad that somebody died, but the complete rarity of this happening, you can't protect everybody from everything because something bad is always going to happen. So I think if people want to stage dive, people should stage dive and be aware of the risk. But I think it'd be a complete overreaction to try to ban or stop stage diving or dancing or wherever people want to express themselves so they're not hurting other people with a reasonable mindset.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think when you get up there and stage dive, you kind of know or should know, you know, you are leaping into a crowd of people and anything can happen and you have to take that risk. I think the part that concerns me more, although, you know, it doesn't mean you necessarily do anything about it, is the people who are standing down there. You know, you're putting them at risk. But again, you know, it's part of the game.
I wonder when people do get injured stage diving, I wonder if they actually staged, like when you actually stage dive, what you're really supposed to do is just kind of like, you know, have a little momentum, but turn on your back and like, you know, fly off a little bit. But some people, especially like at hardcore, like at trash talk, they'll like jump up and like face plant into the ground, you know? So, you know, stage dive with appropriate style is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people will stage dive because they don't know any better, you know, with their feet straight out, you know, and that's how you get kicked in the face. I wonder if it's an issue of education. You know, maybe we should hand out flyers or hold some sort of, webinar.
Well, let's do it briefly right now. Adam, what is the appropriate stage diving technique?
I would say you treat it almost like a slip and slide. You know, arms out, face first, body flat.
See, I would say face up, not face first, like on your back.
I think either way, as long as you're going, you know, arms and head first, back or front, I don't think that matters so much. But you're kind of laying out, you know, if you ever watch pro wrestling, those guys know how to fall flat on their back or flat on their face. Think about it that way.
How much speed are you allowed? How many steps do you get to jump off?
I think the amount of speed is probably, you know, somewhat proportional to how big you are. I mean, if you're a young woman who weighs, you know, 110 pounds, I think you can get a good running start and you're not really going to hurt anybody if you jump right. If you're a big guy, take a step or two and.
Yeah, if you're like, you know, a 19-year-old or let's go younger. You're like a 17-year-old male. You're at the point in your life where you are the most gangly and weird that you're going to be. So you probably have all kinds of fucked up proportions that you're not even sure how to control, right? So you're one of these big mooses. You get on stage, you take a running jump into the crowd. You're flailing all over. You probably have gigantic fucking shoes that kids wear. Get your legs up or you're going to kick someone in the head. It's just... Yeah, this is my problem with this, is that, like, you know, the people that I can remember, at least, that I've had, like, negative stage diving encounters of being under are always these huge, gross dudes that I don't want to touch, let alone have, like, fucking land on me.
Oh, that's bad when they get, like, really smelly sweat and stuff.
Yeah, or they're wearing, like, I don't know, like a sleeveless shirt or something, and I gotta like touch some asshole's armpits.
Maybe we post a sign at shows that there's a weight limit for stage diving, or
if you are gonna stage dive, then stage dive like a proper gentleman, you know, nice light pair of loafers, like the kind you can take off easily in an airport. That would be good. You know, if you could maybe wear like a, I'm thinking like a sports coat.
That'd be nice,
clean sports coat. That's a good look, right? You can wear a sports coat with a pair of jeans. That's pretty good.
Definitely limit the studded apparel while you're
collared shirt, maybe. Nothing says you can't, you know, look your best when you're stage diving. So, you know, don't go heavy on the cologne, but you know, you can smell nice. Am I wrong?
I think we should make, you know how like when people used to fly, they used to like wear suits and like evening gowns or whatever.
Yes.
We should do that with stage diving. We should make stage diving a classy event, you know?
Yeah.
Well, and I think to that point, the way when you fly, the stewardess comes out and kind of explains the basic safety rules, maybe before every show, somebody comes out and kind of runs you through the stage diving safety spiel.
And she has to like ask the people in the front that they're in the mosh zone and the stage dive zone, and they're okay with that. And if they're not, they should move to the back.
We can switch your spot, you know, just raise your hand.
Well, very good. Adam, do you have a song for us that we can practice our stage diving to? Or either Adam. Or if you don't, I do. I thought we did.
I use mine. You're up.
All right. Let's play a tune here. I know. Let's play a song from Uke Hunt. Uke Hunt is Spike Slauson from Me First and the Gimme Gimmes and also another band. And it's him playing the ukulele, doing covers of some of his favorite tunes. This is him doing The Prettiest Star, which is a David Bowie cover. So this is Uke Hunt doing Prettiest Star, available on a 7-inch on Fat Records, and I believe a full-length is coming out very soon.
Prettiest star. prettiest star.
Podcast. Did you guys enjoy that little ukulele music?
You never know what to expect on this show.
You never do. Adam, why don't you fire us off and then other Adam can respond and then I'll give my two cents.
Oh, I don't know if you would have an opinion on this one, John, but okay. Maybe so, Glenn Danzig is...
Danzig!
that's why you wanted me to read this. Is suing Jerry Only for the breach of a 1994 agreement related to Misfits merchandise. The complaint, filed in federal court, alleges that despite a 1994 agreement in which Danzig and Only agreed to only, or sorry, to only agreed
it's
to only,
like really only, yeah, because it's yeah, only.
Agreed to share the Misfits trademark and related imagery. Only has licensed the image out to Hot Topic and other companies without Danzig's consent. This has resulted in Misfits merchandise and related apparel, including things like Misfits bikinis, Misfits motocross gear, and Misfits UGG boots. Furthermore, Danzig alleges that Only filed for a federal trademark registration in 2000 and did not list Danzig as one of the mark's owners. Danzig also alleges that Only threatened to withhold licensing rights to companies if they did business with Danzig at all.
Danzig!
So, the Only led, Danzig less, fine, Misfits released You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch, a 7-inch, in 2013 for the reasonable price of $10 plus $7 shipping. So, I was giving you a chance to Danzig once more.
Danzig!
There we go. All right, so, Adam?
Well, I think we all can agree that there's been a proliferation of Misfits merchandise of questionable quality. I don't know if you guys saw that noisy piece recently on some of the worst of the Misfits merchandise, which it highlighted some of these things like the bikinis and the UGG boots. I kind of wonder, based on the timing, if Danzig didn't see that and say, "Holy shit, enough is enough. I'm calling my lawyer," and that's how we got to this point.
That's a lot of things. People have been asking about the timing thing a lot, and they say, well, crappy Misfits stuff has been in Hot Topic since, like, at least 2000, like pink Misfits hoodies and stuff.
Right.
And so people say, well, why is he filing now? The answer, I don't know why Danzig's filing now. I have no idea. But there are many times where a plaintiff will delay filing. Some of the reasons are, A, they're waiting for the damages to increase, which is technically bad faith, but that's very hard to prove in court. Secondly, it could be maybe a plaintiff needs money, so they didn't want to bother with it before, but now they do. Third, humans aren't robots. They're not like, if X happens, then I'll do Y. Maybe he just didn't want to, and now he just feels like doing it. It could also be the filing, and this happens a lot with artists. The fact is, fans are often more current with an artist's older work than artists are. I bet you Danzig hasn't listened to the Misfits, like the studio recordings, in 20 years, since the remasters came out. I listen to the Misfits like once a month. So Danzig might not even be paying a whole bunch of attention to Misfits merchandise or what's happening with the Misfits. A, because he's mad at Jerry Only. B, because he feels bad about it. C, because it's long in his past. So maybe only now did he realize that all this is happening. It's been happening for years. So that could be any number of the reasons as why he's waited so long to file. As to the Jerry Only angle, man, I've really tried hard to – Danzig's the man. I'm always siding with Danzig. But I've always tried hard to, give Jerry Only the benefit of the doubt. I've seen the new Misfits live like 12 times. I dug them more or less. I think it's cool. I dig Descadena. I dig Robo. But man, this past year, Jerry Only has made it pretty difficult for me to keep backing them up. I mean, honestly, for me, the final straw was that Christmas 7-inch. They put out 3 Christmas covers, which is cool. I mean, it's just a throwaway Christmas thing. No, I got no problems with that. And I'm down with that. But if you wanted all 3 songs, you had to spend $26. which is, I mean, that's just gouging fans. And so that's kind of where I turn on Jerry only. And now, like, you know, he's putting out, like, Misfit Bikinis, Misfit Motocross, Misfit Ugg Boots. It really does seem like he's just kind of bleed the brand dry, if you will, as opposed to treat it like with a bit of respect or dignity. He's becoming a Schlockmeister, where it used to be, you know, the Misfits. So, I mean, I'm not totally against Jerry only now, but man, the guy's fading fast.
I gotta say, from a legal perspective here, it cannot really help his end of the case that, I mean, like, I understand that there's this whole, like, potential breach of contract thing, and that's fine. But the third part here where he allegedly withheld licensing rights to companies if they did business with Danzig at all, like, that shows some malicious intent, does it not?
Well, certainly. And if you could prove that, you could get really big punitive damages. But just because something's in a complaint doesn't mean it's true. And when you allege in a complaint, you always put in anything you can put in good faith. So maybe Danzig heard from some guy. Well, you would put that in the complaint, because if you don't sue now, you'll never get to sue. But also, for settlement negotiations, it gives you just a little bit more leverage. So we don't know that's true. It could be true, but it could also be Danzig just trying to maximize his ability to get a higher settlement.
All right.
Actually, you know, now that I think about it, though, let's say Danzig doesn't settle, right? Let's say this does go to trial. Danzig could hypothetically destroy the new Misfits. Like, let's say the court does find that Jerry only is acting in bad faith or is being sneaky. Danzig could get a huge financial award, and the court might even award total trademark rights back to Danzig. So I wonder if people, like, I think people think it's just a funny kind of stupid story. There's actually a critical point in the history of the Misfits. It depends how Danzig wants to play it. If Danzig just wants money, it'll settle and it'll get a good chunk of cash. If he wants to destroy Jerry only, he might be able to do it.
I wonder, like, what is Danzig's current position on the rest of the Misfits? Because, like, I always got the impression it was, like, more he didn't really care anymore. Like, if only wanted to keep doing it, then whatever, he was going to go do his Danzig thing. Like, is that not kind of where it was left prior to this?
Well, here's where it was. I mean, no one's really sure, because there's a lot of bad blood between those two guys. What it seems like is Danzig is not happy that Jerry only's doing Misfits tracks, but he's not like sick over it, because they came to an agreement. And so Danzig does get money from the sale of the Misfits stuff. With regards to the rest of the Misfits, Doyle, who is Jerry Only's brother, now hates Jerry and has been playing with Danzig, and they've been doing Misfits stuff, and it's awesome. So, you know.
So it's complicated.
It's very it's a complicated situation.
All right, well, let's move on. So we're going to stick with the classic bands here. You want commentary on this one, or you want me to jump in here?
Because you love this band, right, Adam? So I'll intro it, and I'll let you talk about it. Keith Levine, founding member of Public Image Limited, but also early member of The Clash, has announced the release date of Commercial Zone 2014. This album is intended as a completed or definitive version of the abortant 1984 Public Image Limited Levine album, Commercial Zone. What Commercial Zone was is what happens is in 92, I believe, Keith Levine and John Lydon, frontman of PIL and Sex Pistols, of course, were working on a new album. They got in a huge fight, and Levine either quit or was fired from the band. Levine flied to the west coast of USA. That's a weird way to put that. He flew to California and released sort of a bootleg version of the Commercial Zone album. That they called it a PIL album, but only Keith Levine was getting money from it, and it was basically unfinished tracks from those sessions. John Lydon sent a cease and desist to them and basically wiped that bootleg off the market. Then John Lydon recorded a new album with new musicians called This Is What You Want, This Is What You Get, with some of the songs that Levine wrote, but different sound recordings and different musicians. So this is basically Keith Levine saying, here's what I want at Commercial Zone to really sound like, and I'm going to do it all myself.
So I don't think that I've heard this at all, and I'm curious as to, like, how available it is, at least in its original form.
There's a couple thousand. I actually have it. Only a couple thousand copies of it, though.
You have Commercial Zone?
I have the LP, but it wasn't easy to get, and it wasn't cheap. There's a couple thousand of them out there. If I recall correctly, there was one pressing, and then it was wiped off the market, and then there was another pressing, I think, in Europe, and the same thing happened. Honestly, it's a pretty good. It's not a complete record. I think there's, you know, 7 or 8 more or less finished tracks, and you know, a lot of them are skeletons of what would become, you know, much more fleshed out songs on later PIL records. Like, there's a version of This Is Not a Love Song that's much more stripped down. There's a lot less going on. There's no synthy sounding horns on it. And honestly, it's a much better version. So I think Keith Levine probably has, you know, a vision in his mind of what this record could have been had they finished it. And, you know, it seems like for whatever reason, for him, this is a convenient time to say, I'm going to finish it up and get my own, you know, complete vision of it out there. You know, the motives behind it, I can't say for sure.
I mean, I'm a big fan of This Is Not a Love Song, so I'm curious to hear this version of it then. I guess, like, it bears mentioning, maybe the story didn't make this, like, entirely clear, that like, when Levine had, like, the full recordings of, like, the rest of the guys, right? Like, he had the masters for the record, and then he did those. So this wasn't just, like, a weird solo thing that he went and released as Pill, right?
No, though they were the masters.
Yeah.
At the time, he took off with them, basically.
Well, cool. I like me some Pill. I don't feel that I get enough traction on punk news. No one ever cares when we talk about them, but yeah, we should talk about them more.
I
agree. Yeah, well, stay tuned, punk news listeners. We got something cool coming up with regarding the PIL and Levine, so keep your eyes peeled.
All right, so what else do we got coming up here? Are we doing this next one?
Me first in the Gimme Gimmes, maybe.
Oh, we'll do that one.
Yeah.
All right. So, me first in the Gimme Gimmes. I guess there was no anticipation there. We kind of blew it. See, world, this is how organized the punk news world is.
Anarchy.
This is about it.
I want to be anarchy.
That's all right. So, Brooklyn Vegan posted a stream last week of the new Me First in the Gimme Gimmes cover. They are playing Christina Aguilera's Beautiful, which is going to appear on their new record, Are We Not Men? We Are Diva, which is a great title, which was due out on May 13th of this year, which, when is that? Is that next Tuesday? It's next Tuesday.
Tuesday. Yeah.
It's next Tuesday from us recording this anyways, so it'll probably be out by the time you guys hear this on Fat Records, so you can go check that out. Any thoughts? John, are you a big Christina buff?
You know it. I wasn't a fan, a big Me First and the Gimme Gimmes fan until I reviewed the Go Down Under EP, and I loved it. And honestly, like I'm a fan of this band. Somehow I'm becoming like a big Fat Records fan. I was never a fan of Fat Records, and all of a sudden I'm like digging a lot of stuff they're putting out. I mean, this is silly and fun, and I'm down with it, you know? And plus, I love how they hide, you know, old school punk tracks in there. They had TSOL's Superficial Love opening. I think it was Superficial Love. And so, I mean, this is cool. It's just a fun, you know, summer record that, you know, you blast every few months and enjoy. So I'm down, man. I'm down with the wacky and wild and fun stuff. I'm down.
You know, I'm not generally a fan of, like, the ironic punk cover, but these guys are, they're fully committed. And I, for whatever reason, it's like they do their thing and they have their place, and I will enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, I have very little patience for this sort of thing. Like, really, as far as I'm concerned, these are the only ones that these are the only guys I ever want to hear do this kind of stuff. Because there's really a very thin line between this and, like, Fearless Records presents Punk Goes Bananas Volume 17, right? So. Yeah. I'm okay with, like, ceding all of the territory in the wacky punk covers war to Me First and just leaving it there.
Fair enough. Well, let's go to the podcast with some heavier news about fraud. Last year, a bunch of bands, including Converge and Slapshot, came together to throw a benefit show for the One Fund. The show was called This Is Boston. Oh, no, the production company was called This Is Boston. Raised nearly $14,000 for the event for the One Fund. However, the problem is after this production company raised the $14,000, they haven't really accounted as to actually making any of the donations to the One Fund. Jacob Bannon of Converge followed up on. He said he spent months after the show following up, trying to get confirmation of the money's transfer to the One Fund, and was repeatedly met with excuses. By October, Bannon, as well as other bands, began getting involved once it was confirmed that the One Fund had not seen any of the proceeds from the event. So let's see here. And then the rest of the... So it was a sold-out show, but it looks like none of the money was transferred to the One Fund, despite it being a charity event. It says that the guy that threw the event, I think his name is... his name is Ethel Therados. He says he sent the funds anonymously to One Fund via Western Union, but then he couldn't... it doesn't seem like he could produce like the proof that he did send that Western Union. Western Union does give you a receipt, if you will. So it seems as though right now the money is missing, and no one can really say where it's at. I gotta say, man, this blows, baby. I mean, do you guys think this is something sinister? Is this just somebody making bad decisions, or is this just somebody trying to throw an event, but actually it's costing them money due to poor planning?
I think the fact, and you know, the story that we sourced a lot of this information to was pretty detailed, and I think one of the things that stuck out at me was they tried through a lot of different people to contact this guy to get some sort of explanation. The friends who vouched for him when he was putting on the show said, you know, he cut off communication. I think that, you know, it makes the whole thing suspicious. If there was some sort of problem where, you know, he owed someone more money when it came to putting this on, you know, and he came out and said that, I think people would have some sympathy for that. When people are asking a lot of questions about something like this and you suddenly, you know, drop out of sight, I think that makes people very suspicious.
I gotta say, why would you send it anonymously through Western Union? Like that's the part where you're just kind of like, oh, it's lost in the mail. What? Like that's a really lame excuse for that sort of thing. That alone would be that's the thing, right? I have no proof to make accusations about anyone, of course, but that seems pretty shady.
Yeah. Why do you guys think like there's so much shadiness with promoters? Promoters are infamous for being shady. Is it just because it's easy to like make money disappear, or is it just because people have good intentions and get overwhelmed and they get involved in something they shouldn't get involved in? Why like you see this in music, you see this in comedy, you see it in all types of things. Why are promoters like known as shady guys?
I think it's probably easy to be shady because you're dealing with a lot of cash, and it's obviously easier to make cash disappear. I think that's part of it. I think, you know, in some ways it attracts shady people because they feel like it's, you know, there's not a ton of regulation, there's not a lot of oversight. This might be an area where it's easy to get away with something. I do think there's a certain number of these kinds of cases do, you know, people with good intentions. I want to put on a show, I want to raise money, and you know, it sounds great, but you really don't know what goes into it. And sometimes people do get in over their heads, and that's sad. But you know, there are also people who see an opportunity to, you know, to make off with somebody else's cash and do it.
So you think these guys say to themselves, I could really scam a lot of people out of some money here if I play this right, and they act on that?
I think there are some people that do that. I don't think it's everyone, and I don't think every case where money goes missing is necessarily something sinister. But there are promoters who see the opportunity where, you know, all these tickets are sold at the door, there's no receipts, you know, I'm just collecting, you know, everybody's $10 over and over again, and nobody's keeping a good count, nobody's gonna know, you know, how much money disappears at the end of the night.
Yeah, you know what? I don't want to cast any shade on promoters because a couple of my favorite people in the world are promoters. But it's probably the kind of thing that, it, you know, you work for the most part in the background. You're not, you know, you're not the one on stage. You're, you know, the one who for the most part can work anonymously or is just dealing with stuff after the fact. And it's probably really easy to become a crappy promoter. Like I imagine that like the initial stage in, you know, hey, I'm going to take money at the door and have people come play a show. That's probably the easy part of it. Like the hard part of it is actually, you know, running a good, respectable, tight operation on the back end and keeping track of all the money and making sure everyone gets paid and yada, yada, yada. So it's probably like easy enough if you're someone that doesn't quite have your scruples about you to start promoting. It's probably really freaking hard once you've started to actually like be good at it.
Adam W. Adamy, on the sketchiness scale of 1 to 10, where do you rate this event, this Boston charity thing?
This is, you know, only knowing our article about it, which makes me an expert, I would say an 8.
Mm.
Yeah, I would say it's up there in the 8-9 range. I think, you know, the anonymous sending via Western Union, the sudden total lack of communication, I think all of those point in the direction of suspicious as opposed to, you know, innocent sort of fuck up.
I mean, it'd be maybe a 9 if there was like a box of skulls or something, but
well,
it's always more suspicious when there's a box of skulls.
But what if it's if it's Danzig, it's less suspicious.
Well, if it's Danzig, it's just like you have boxes of skulls all over the place. Right,
like I mean, if you would like deliver a piece at Danzig, like he'd probably have a box of skulls just sitting around, you know?
He might
give you your change in skulls. Really.
Yeah, he might tip you with a skull.
Honestly, that'd be like the greatest point of my life. That'd be like my best day ever. If Danzig tipped me with a skull, I'd have him like sign it and everything.
So I think of course he wouldn't, because he wants your skull.
But Adam W. with the closing whammy, we gotta wrap it up after that. We all agree Danzig's the man. This thing is sketchy. Let's close it out with a tune. This is Morning Glory. Morning Glory put out a record earlier this year. It was called War Songs. It's on Fat Records. I dug it. I'm a big Morning Glory fan. I saw them live. They're awesome. If you get to see them, this is a Morning Glory jam, and it is called Standard Issue.
Free trade dogs, dirty Mexico, West from your dad.
podcast. I think Adam and Adam, I think we had a pretty hot podcast. I mean, it was, you know, some good debate, some good comedy. We tackled some heavy issues. We threw little yucks around, little jokes here, little yucks there. What'd you guys think?
Yeah, hey, I'm sweaty, so I think it was a good one.
Adam W., how sweaty are you?
I just desperately want people to love us again, John.
People love us, Adam. People always love us. I mean, like we're like Van Gogh. You know who cut off his ear? And like his girlfriend didn't understand why he cut off his ear. She loved him. She just didn't understand him. That's us. That's punk news. We're the tortured artists that people want to love and do love, but can't fathom as to why they do the things that they do. But they know we're on to some next level stuff.
So are you going to cut off your ear?
I already cut off both my ears, actually. Didn't work.
Clearly.
Thanks again for listening to the Punk News Podcast. Two lucky listeners will receive my ears in a box for listening. Thanks again. And as always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. We got a bunch of mail we got to respond to, but we had a lot to talk about this podcast. I'll get to the mail next week. We got tons of stuff to talk about. We'll talk to you guys later. Thanks for listening.